anybody who doesn't say PCGamer.com at least twice doesn't go home.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 226 for June 10th, 2010. Great Scott, on today's pre-E3 show, we interview Telltale Games creative director Dave Grossman about the upcoming Jurassic Park and Back to the Future games. But first, PCGamer.com will launch tomorrow. The StarCraft II beta goes dark. The Deus Ex Human Revolution trailer is awesome. And Valve plays coy about their E3 surprise. Fallout drops games for Windows Live. And Dungeon Siege 3 is announced. That and more on today's show. Hi, everybody. I'm Dan Stapleton, and with me today are our esteemed editor-in-chief, Logan Decker. I almost called you Logan Jacker.
Hi.
Senior editor, Evan Lottie.
Must go faster.
And our associate editor, Josh Augustine.
Ahoy.
Intern squad, Eric and Robert.
Greetings, all.
Howdy.
And our producer extraordinaire, Andy Bauman.
What's up?
We have a full crew here today.
Wow.
To talk about many, many things, the most important of which being us. And Logan, why don't you take it away?
Yes, tomorrow is the thrilling debut of the new PCGamer.com website. Yes, we have pulled ourselves by the bootstraps into the 21st century, and we are going to be debuting a new global site. It is not just PC Gamer US we're looking at here. It's PC Gamer, both magazines, PC Gamer US and PC Gamer UK. We're collaborating on this site. So it is going to cover the world of PC gaming all the planet around. And you are going to find out in the coming week exactly what kind of site it's going to be like, because we are starting before E3, so we can bring you stories all day, every day from the show floor. And that's what you'll be getting. And it's going to be a great adjunct to the print magazine itself, where we can bring you the real-time news and all the excitement that websites bring to people and happiness and all that stuff.
And we will be rolling the PC Gamer podcast site into the new PCGamer.com. So,
Cool.
And, oh yeah.
So hopefully that's one way to resolve the the malicious software attack we had on the podcast site.
If you saw the attack warning, we were using our old version of WordPress, and that's pretty vulnerable, I guess. But once we realized it was under attack, we figured, well, we're going to roll it into PCGamer.com anyway, which is going to be a much more bulletproof site. And it's going to be like kind of a one-stop place for the forums, for the podcast, news, and also content from the magazine that we'll be bringing to the web.
And Logan hereby issues the challenge to all the hackers out there don't do that.
That's bad. Yeah, that's bad.
But anyway, so check that out. It'll be live tomorrow. So anytime from here on forward, just go to PCGamer.com.
Yeah.
That's exciting. And also,
I just want to emphasize that come Monday evening, it's going to be a flood of PC gaming news from E3. All of us are going to be contributing to the site, again, all day, every day. And on those days and every day thereafter, it's going to be pretty much your only source for pure PC gaming only news all around the world. Ha.
That's exciting. I don't think people understand how exciting this is.
No, I'm beside myself with excitement.
Honestly, I'm having these flashbacks to like the last time there was an actual updated infrastructure at PCGamer.com was like I was in 10th grade of high school.
I so did not need to hear that.
I used to go there and read like the columns and stuff. Like, yeah,
it has been a long time in coming, but yeah, that you will have that experience again.
One thing that was frustrating is that there were times when we thought, okay, this is we've got some resources, we've got an idea, but we were just worried about not doing it right. you know.
Yeah.
And we thought of starting small and just building on it, but we really wanted to get it done right. And this year was the time when we had everything we needed in place. We had the resources, we had the ability, we had the will, and really, I got it. Hats off to our brethren in the UK for all the hard work they did on this site, doing the design and doing all the back end stuff, which just baffles me. They did so much great work. And so my hats off to them for that as well. It's just, we had the ability to do it right. And I wish we had had a website all these years, but I'm really, really glad that we're launching the right way. And with a fully fledged site, you know,
yeah,
with all the bells and whistles.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
I mean yeah. Imagine like a floating Spanish galleon just descending on the Los Angeles Convention Center, and us sort of sliding down ropes, holding scimitars and slashing zombie skeletons and
clang clang. Yeah.
Do people on Spanish galleons have scimitars? I mean,
oh, they do.
I mean, I would think they would be. Yeah, I would have thought they'd be more like rapiers.
No, we raided some Arab ports, so we took them. Yeah. That's basically what's going to happen, though.
Yeah.
Very well. Anyway, on to the kind of thing that you will be reading about on the new and improved PCGamer.com. PCGamer.com. Remember, PCGamer.com.
Wait, did I say enough? Did I say enough? Quote? Did I get a quotient in too?
I picked up some things from radio ads on the way into work today. I took some notes. Anyway, the StarCraft II beta is no more. You cannot play it anymore. Even we cannot play it anymore. It makes me sad. but it does not overshadow the joy of the new PCGamer.com. No, okay, I'll stop. But it was an addiction there for a little while with me, just trying to climb up the ladder before Blizzard wiped it again.
I guess that's so harsh, you know. Couldn't they just make it like 16 hours and then 12 hours and then 8 hours a day, you know, and just kind of wean you off?
Yeah,
that's just a quick cold turkey.
Cold turkey in this case.
Rip the Band-Aid off.
Oh.
So I don't know, Dan. Won't you kind of feel relieved to have a reprieve of my Void Rays rushing your base constantly?
I kicked the crap out of your Void Rays. What are you talking about?
I don't remember that part. I just remember beating you like 3 times in a row and then never logging in since then.
Yeah, I wiped the floor with Josh's Void Rays. It took me a little while to figure out how to deal with it, but the Void Rays, for people who don't know, are a flying Protoss unit that fires an evil beam of death and destruction particularly at your buildings. They're nasty because it gets more intense the longer it's focused. So you can get to those, at least with the balance as it was in the beta, you can get to those really quick. And the Zerg, which I tend to play as, have very little anti-air defense early in the game. So he was able to just come in and raid my base really quickly with those things. I could have just, you know, Zergling rushed him really early, but I hate doing that because it's no fun for me to end a game in like 3 minutes. It's fun. It's funny the first time when I laugh at Josh, but after that, it's less fun. So I finally figured out by watching some replays that the best way to defend against that, once you figure out that that's what he's doing by scouting him, is to build 2 Zerg queens, because two queens together can take down like 3 or 4 Void Rays, especially if they're healing each other. Which, anyway, does anyone else have any closing thoughts on the StarCraft II beta?
It's nice that we're going to have a chance to sort of build up our enthusiasm again. Honestly, I mean, I'm glad it's now and not, I don't know, like 2 weeks before launch or something.
Yeah, is there still access to the map editor while it's down or no?
I don't think so. I'm not certain about that. But I don't know. I never actually played around the map editor. That's an aspect that I tend to get into like after I'm. It's like I kind of exhaust the content that's available, and then I'll turn to the map editor to mess around with that, and you know, maybe make something fun or download other people's stuff. But I kind of go sequentially. I just didn't get to that part yet, so I haven't played with it yet, and thus don't know if it's still running.
PCGamer.com.
Anyway, nice.
Yeah, we encourage you to open it in multiple browsers just to see how it works. See which one you like best.
Yeah, does it run better in Chrome or Firefox or Internet Explorer?
Create some desktop shortcuts for each one, so you can sort of like benchmark, you know.
Yeah, StarCraft You know, it will be coming back probably like a week or so before launch. So we will get to you know, rejoin the fray then. But I'll be interested to see what kind of balance changes there are. It actually made it more interesting for me the way that we were playing, you know, as they were making some pretty dramatic changes to unit balance. And you know, I would play, you know, all day one day and kind of get the hang of things. And then you'd come back the next day and, you know, like the one unit had a power the one day that was then taken away from that unit and given to a different unit or just eliminated or changed dramatically. It really kind of made things interesting.
Yeah, I'm not really a big fan of playing a ton in betas. I like kind of the finished product. I don't want to invest a lot of time in something I know is going to get wiped. But I think RTS is the one genre where I do really enjoy that because the balance changes are so extreme. It's hard to kind of... it's going to be hard to replicate on the live service. The changes aren't going to be happening. You're going to constantly know what units are going to do. And this time, every time I'd log in, a character would be doing something completely ridiculous that I'd never seen before. It's really nice.
For someone like you, Josh, who plays like a lot of MMOs, I can definitely see why you wouldn't want to invest a lot of time in something. Like, you know, because your progress in something like that is persistent. And in StarCraft, to some extent, it is as well, because they do have the online tracking. But not nearly to the extent as they do in an MMO. But yeah, I mean, like when they wipe an MMO, it's like, you know, it's like you've lost your
pet. My life.
But yeah, and here it's a little bit different. Somebody is making a comparison to Team Fortress 2 somewhere right now because they are constantly changing the game and
120 you know, adding patches.
Yeah. So, and each of those, not necessarily each of those patches, but a lot of those patches makes like a dramatic change to the gameplay. And that really spices things up. And, you know, Valve somehow manages to do it without unbalancing a game. I don't know if that's even possible to do with an RTS, to asymmetrically, like if they put out a new unit for one side and you know, at a time in StarCraft, I think that would be a disaster for balance. But I don't know. Maybe not. It could probably be done, but it really does keep the game, it keeps you on your toes. You never really know what to expect. Anyway, moving on a little bit. The Deus Ex Human Revolution trailer came out shortly after last week's podcast. And I didn't see it for a couple days after it came out, 3 or 4 days after it came out. So I was like way behind the curve and I watched it for the first time and I just wanted to go around telling everybody about it because, but I was, you know, just totally late to that party.
Nuts,
So I felt like a total loser. But, It's an amazing trailer. I mean, it's really cinematic. It's like I would watch that movie, not just play the game.
Yeah, they did a fantastic job. Yeah.
Evan, I know you're enthusiastic about it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. I mean, when's the last time I felt this enthusiastic about a guy in a trench coat? Right. The first Matrix. The effects are great. I mean, you could certainly see Square's sort of Japanese, you know, Final Fantasy expertise and aesthetic coming through in some of those sequences with like the people riding in the streets and like the newscaster and things like that felt kind of a, you know, that's maybe my criticism, like felt like a weird way of integrating that sense of conspiracy. But I mean, the guy's voice sounds like Batman and he's dropping down out of the sky and punching through walls and snapping people's necks. That's all you can really ask for.
And it didn't show any gameplay footage, which is, you know, a little bit disappointing, but
sure.
But it did a fantastic job of setting the stage and the tone for a game that you know, ideally will continue on the first game's tradition of having a really strong story, having great characters, having just an environment where you can't trust anybody. You know, I think it's a great sign for the game.
Yeah, it's always bugged me before, you know, it drives me crazy to see trailers without gameplay. But in this instance, I gotta say, you know, A, it kicked ass. And B, you know, it's gonna inform any clip I see of gameplay in the future. You know, I'm gonna have that context to sort of place it in. And like you know, like you said, Dan, it sets a tone. And I love that tone.
Right. And you know, and like I said, if that were a trailer for a movie, I would be just like ecstatic about it.
Hell yeah!
And although, you know, for a game, I'm a little bit more reserved because I am used to having my expectations built up by you know, CGI trailers and then kind of it's like, oh, the game doesn't actually look anything like that.
Yeah.
But like we have seen, and in our upcoming story, you will see some in-game screenshots that do look very promising. So, yeah. And especially in context of having seen those screenshots and read about how the actual game plays, it was mm-hmm. very, it made me very happy.
Yeah.
Plus, I know a lot of that, like how fun a lot of that stuff is. We have a house cleaner come in twice a month, and I would punch through the wall and scare her and go, ah, like that. And you should see, she would like jump and her head would almost hit the ceiling, and she's not tall.
Nice.
You know, she's like 5'4", and I would punch through the wall and go, yeah, and just watch her sail. It was, I mean, so if that's the kind of thing we can do in the game, I'm all for it.
You have Transformer hand?
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, no, I mean, it's like San Francisco, the walls aren't very, there's not a lot of insulation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Indeed.
Yeah.
I guess also, Transformer hand is not covered by an insurance here at Future.
So. Oh, I shouldn't have said anything.
Yeah, there's only a small set of augmentations. I got to say, I love, and this is explained more in our future. I'm not sure if everybody picked up on this, but there's a moment in the trailer where Adam Jensen, the guy that you're seeing in the cool trench coat and the glasses,
the protagonist,
he's walking up behind this guy or this enemy who's trying to hack a computer console or something, and the guy turns around and points a gun at him, and Jensen just does this sort of like gesture, and the guy shoots himself in the face. So there is mind control in the game.
Wow.
And yeah. I am super intrigued by the idea of doing that, and just really curious to see, and like I said, our feature explains this better, our cover story later this month, and just how that's going to take place in terms of animations and like percentage chance and skill trees and like how that's going to be implemented. Really kind of a cool and, you know, a little controversial if it includes suicide feature.
It's not actual suicide because he's not intentionally taking his own life.
But he's controlling his mind to make him decide to, I don't know. I'm not sure.
For the record, I've never done that to our housekeeper.
Very good.
I'm really interested to see if it is like just basically like a kill move and a cool animation for a kill move, or if there's going to be like a strategy element to it, like where you can, you know, convince him to walk down this corridor or convince him that he heard a noise over here that he'll go tell his buddies. So you can kind of decide, you know, do I want to go in guns blazing or kind of manipulate them into creating a path for you to get through.
Right, because stealth is definitely a big part of the game. And that's just one of many games that we'll be seeing at E3 next week. Yes.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So I've got my list of appointments. I'm going to be running around pretty. I guess we've got a meeting right after this podcast to discuss, you know, who's seeing exactly what and when and where. But our schedules are all packed. Does anybody have like a game in particular they're really excited about seeing?
I'm jazzed about seeing the Warhammer 40K MMO.
Oh, is that? Yeah, I guess that is being shown, isn't it? Wow. It's been so long since we've seen anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And like we got like a piece of concept art like a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago.
It's been a long time, and this really seems like it's kind of the first actual look of how the game's gonna operate. It's such a, I mean, converting that license into an MMO for me has gotta be a challenge. I mean, I just can't, I think Josh, we were talking about this in weeks past, like how do you take a tabletop game with, I mean, it sounds like a simple thing. There's races, there's, you know, characters and enemies, and there's constant war, you know, there's an easy basis for conflict, but the way, I mean, what are you? Are you a tank? Are you a tank commander? Are you a Tyranid general? Are you an orc grunt? Like, just how are they going to stratify that ranking system but include all the wonderful, like, fleshy units and interesting things about their IP? I'm not sure.
But, yeah, but I mean, hasn't a lot of that kind of hasn't the way been paved for that with the Warhammer Online MMO? I mean, it's the you know, fantasy arm of the franchise, but it's, you know, there are a lot of parallels there, right?
That's very true. But I mean, 40K has a much bigger emphasis on technology, meaning vehicles, meaning, you know, just all that. There's like a bigger spectrum of units to play with there. So, you know, I can't imagine it being a game where you're walking around as a space marine taking quests from people. And I mean, there's just no context for that exists in 40K. So,
right.
Yeah. The one thing I'm really interested in is we've kind of talked about this before, and like kind of the lore of 40K is there's no good guys. Everyone is bad, it, like in different ways. So it's like, how do you convince players to be fighting for their cause? Because like even in MMOs like WoW or something, you know, Horde are, quote-unquote, the bad guys, but they're just misunderstood good guys. And in 40K, everyone's bad. How do you convince that, you know, you're fighting for the destruction of the entire universe? Like, how do you motivate someone for that?
It's propaganda. I mean, that's what public relations is, Josh.
Yes, for right? The emperor.
for the emperor.
Right. How did Hitler convince people to fight for the extermination of an entire race of people? I mean, you know, you just gotta get a good slogan.
Well, they're going to need a lot of good slogans in 40K.
Right. So, how about you, Josh? What are you looking forward to seeing?
I'm really looking forward to seeing Tor. I have not had hands-on time with Tor yet. I know. I'm just way behind on that one. So I'm really excited. I got some extended time to sit down and play with it. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm also looking forward to meeting the Riot Games guys. Because much as I love League of Legends and talked about it in the magazine and worked with them, I've never met them in person. So
they're really cool dudes.
Oh, it's Deus Ex 3. I shouldn't say it. Deus Ex Human Revolution. I keep thinking of it as 3. But, I mean, after that trailer, I can't stop thinking about it. I just want to get my hands on it, you know, because the trailer made it even worse, you know, because without gameplay footage, it just made me want it even more. I also want more hands-on time with Crysis 2. Because what I've done so far has just blown me away. And I gotta say this, and I'm not breaking any embargoes by saying it. I just gotta say, you know, ages ago, I saw, some of what the CryEngine 3 was capable of on the consoles, and it blew me away. I just couldn't believe what they were able to achieve, you know, using those boxes. But now, you know, time has since passed, and I've seen it on very large screens now, and I'm telling you.
Yes.
I mean, no, it's still great. I mean, you know, but I just couldn't imagine playing Crysis 2 on a console. If I had one, sure I would, but it's just, you know, you got to see it in its glory, you know. And I don't think it's going to take a really hefty system to run it. We learned that with Crisis Warhead, you know. And what's more is that Crytek has built some stuff into CryEngine 3 that is just going to go nuts on the PC. Doing things, one thing in particular that I can think of that nobody thought was possible. And I would not have believed it was possible if I hadn't seen it for myself a little less than a month ago at a pre-E3 thing I attended. So I can't wait to talk about it. It's less than 4 days away when I can. But again, like I said, I didn't think it was possible, and they did it.
So Logan, where will you be talking about this?
On PCGamer.com. Thank you for asking.
And for me, I'm really looking forward to seeing XCOM.
I had my chance. Okay.
Well, you can't take all of them. You gotta leave something for me. But, I'm looking forward to seeing that. I'm the XCOM fanboy, and this is not, you know, the XCOM that I wanted, but it still looks cool. Mm-hmm. I can kind of accept a reimagining of it. And kind of like the Battlestar Galactica kind of way. You know, it could still be a really good game, even though it's not, you know, exactly what I had in mind. And, you know, I've still got my hopes up for like Xenonauts, which is a little independent, kind of original XCOM style game in the works. So I'm, you know, all hope is not lost for that kind of gameplay. So, but the mood they're working on at 2K Marin looks pretty cool. Just kind of the almost old timey X-Files kind of approach they're taking. I want to see it in action because like everything I've heard, like the screenshots, the initial ones with the kind of the monolithic, alien like ring thing sucking stuff up. Everything I'm told is that in motion, it looks like so much better than the screenshot. So I want to see that for myself. And, I also want some time with Civilization 5. Just because I've been kind of sucked back into the Civilization mood lately. So. I'm anxious to see that in person as well.
I'm not clear on why Dan got to have two.
You had two.
I did not. I had one.
You had Deus Ex and Crysis.
Oh.
Captain Camelot. And of course, we're all looking forward to seeing what Valve is doing. They've been kind of messing around with us this past couple of weeks, haven't they?
Yeah.
Initially, for those who haven't been following the saga of Valve being weird, they had scheduled an event at E3 to show everybody Portal 2. It's like, okay, cool, we'll go see Portal 2. We're all psyched about that. And then they sent out an email saying, this is, you know, it was like in character from why can't I remember the name of the
GLaDOS.
Well, it wasn't from GLaDOS.
Aperture Science.
Aperture Science. That's what I was looking for. In character as like an announcement from Aperture Science. They're like, oh, we're canceling the Portal 2 announcement, but replacing it with a surprise. And, you know, when I first read that, I'm like, oh, that's just them being silly and they haven't canceled any announcement, or, you know, not announcement, but show or anything. You know, they're just, you know, trying to build up, you know, enthusiasm for it. But then I guess they actually were canceling that event. And they were replacing it with a surprise. And so then like the speculation went absolutely nuts. What are they going to be showing? So since they're not showing Portal 2, right? Because they just canceled their Portal 2 event. So there was speculation that it would be, Half-Life 2 Episode 3. There was speculation it would be the Source Engine 3. There
was speculation. The dumbest speculation. Sorry, go ahead.
What was the dumbest speculation? The movie thing?
No, Counter-Strike 2.
Oh, right.
Oh.
But no. without Source 3, there can be no Counter-Strike 2.
Yeah, I can think of a thousand reasons why. With that, they just roll out a beta for Source, a new beta. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah. Sorry.
Anyway.
Fools.
So
he's so mad his ears are getting red.
They are.
And so then Valve had to come out and say, yeah, it actually is about Portal 2.
So in summary, it took them three press releases over 2 weeks to clarify that. Like, being clever isn't always the best way to do things.
I liked Havoc06's theory that they were actually going to debut Portal 3 and then Portal 2 would be next. I thought that was brilliant.
Time travel.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know what? It's nice to you know, promote speculation about their ideas. I mean, for Valve, I guess they kind of win anyway when they create this kind of confusion because everybody's talking about Valve. You know, what's Valve doing? Valve. You know, it's like we're talking about PCGamer.com. you know, they win just because, you know, they get so much publicity. And the other piece of speculation I left off was the whatever game they're working on with one of the guys that created Defense of the Ancients.
Ice Frog, yeah.
Right. So that you know, all kinds of speculation, everybody's thinking about Valve. So that's a win for them. Even if they do create confusion amongst people like us.
Did everybody else get a chance? Because I got another one.
A chance to do what?
To say what they were looking forward to.
Oh, if you have another one, yes, you can do that.
Well, okay, so this year is the first year when I get to do all in one place at this roughly the same time to try out all of those streaming services for games. So there's three. There's Gaikai, there's OnLive, and then there's one new one that I hadn't heard of until a couple weeks ago. And so I'm going to be trying all of them out. And they all, you know, have these sort of grandiose claims and, oh, play Crysis on your cell phone, blah, blah, blah. So it'll be very interesting. I mean, I realize, again, these are very sort of controlled environments in which they'll be played. But, you know, I still want to get an idea of how well it works, even in an ideal environment.
And, you know, I neglected to ask. I was just asking the people who are going to E3 what they were looking forward to seeing. But I neglected to ask, like, Andy and Eric and Robert, what are you guys looking forward to seeing? Andy, you first.
Well, I was going to say the Portal thing, but now that you've just squashed my dreams, it's become a whole nother Left 4 Dead 2 announcement. And now I'm deciding, and I'm setting up a boycott group as we speak.
Are you boycotting Portal 2 because it's coming out in 2011 and not 2010 as was originally announced?
Sure. Any reason, really. But I'll still play it.
But I want it now.
No, I don't really know. You guys already covered most of the stuff. Yeah. Crysis 2 is up there for sure.
And Eric, how about you?
PC side of things.
Yes.
Yeah, that would be the one we're asking about.
I really...
Sega, whatever.
I'm more looking forward to what we don't know. I mean, it seems odd to me that there's so many announcements coming out about, oh, we're going to have this at E3 and we're going to do this at E3. But it seems to me at E3, there's usually lots of surprises. And
That's a good point, actually.
If everyone's just kind of been revealing their cards early, I would think there's at least some companies hiding something to, I don't know, shock and surprise me.
What's your outlandish prediction?
Now I have to think. See?
We'll come back to you. Robert, what do you want to see?
Yeah.
I really want to know what Bethesda's doing. They've been publishing a lot, and I don't know that they've been doing a great job at picking what they're publishing. But we don't really know what they're developing right now, do we? And I want Elder Scrolls V right now. So I put over 1,000 hours actually into Elder Scrolls 4, which is absurd for a single player game. So I definitely want to see what they're developing. And beyond that, I mean, Civ 5 has already been mentioned, but definitely Civ 5. I'm sure there will be a lot of surprises at this year's E3 because, like Eric said, I mean, there's really a lot that we don't know. We have no idea what Valve's going to do, of course. Well, except for me. It's episode 3. But
They've actually said they're not doing that.
Well,
but that's the See, that's
misdirection.
That's part of it. They're throwing you off. So just be prepared. Know that I called it.
Yeah, that would be an awesome way to like never get anybody to listen to anything you say ever again. Like if you say I'm not doing this and then you do it, it's like that would be that would really destroy their ability to control any message ever.
But that's what politicians do.
That's true, and nobody trusts them. You know, but like, you know, if Valve ever wanted anybody to believe any word, anything they ever say again, I don't think they can do that. I think that would be a foolish thing for them to do.
Yeah, I just feel like at this point, Valve owes the fans something. At least just tell us they're not going to do it. You know, just stop it.
I don't know. They're definitely doing it. I mean, it's like in there somewhere. We have concept art from it from like 2 years ago, but yeah. It's like, you know, somewhere somebody in Valve is working on Half-Life 2 Episode 3, you know, but who knows, like, if that will ever actually happen, but they are doing something on it.
What about like a game starring dog, like A Dog's Life or something like that? That'd be fun.
I'd play it.
Yeah.
Could be a great kart racer.
So, Eric, where's your prediction? He just forgot. He doesn't know how to think.
I don't know what to think. Yeah.
He was chewing.
See, you're asking me to predict a surprise, which I'm excited for because I don't know what it is.
Predict the unpredictable.
I'm predicting a squirrel-based MMO.
Nice. Nice.
And Robert, as far as what, you know, Bethesda is doing. We're not exactly sure what they're doing directly. And like the team that made, you know, Oblivion, which is like, Emil, Pagliarino. I'm sure I butchered his name. I can never say it right. And Todd Howard are like the two leads of that team. We're not sure what they're working on, but over at, in, you know, Bethesda publishing world, they are working on Fallout New Vegas, of course,
right?
Among other things,
yeah.
But there was some music to my ears for Fallout New Vegas this week. They announced in a Q&A with fans on their message board, they announced that they are dropping Games for Windows Live from Fallout New Vegas.
Replacing
it with Steamworks. So you won't have to go through. You won't have to spend Microsoft points to buy any DLC for that game. You'll get patches organically. I guess it patched through Steam before, but you don't have to deal with all the crap.
You know, nothing personal, Microsoft, but you did it to yourself. I mean, what does it say when people go, yeah, when they find out that something isn't using one of your products? That just...
Justice.
It's just... Yeah. It's that bad. It really is.
It makes me so sad because like on our Facebook page, like there was a deal for like 50% off on Batman Arkham Asylum Game of the Year Edition on Steam this week, and it's like, oh, this is awesome news. Anybody who hasn't bought that game is going to be psyched about it. And I put that up, and like half of the comments on that post were like, if it has Games for Windows Live on it still, I'm not buying it. it's like, damn it. It's destroying fun.
Edge magazine this month has, you know, in their front of their book, they have a story on just what the experience is like and how bad it's gotten.
You know what the biggest problem with it is save games, because
they talked about that first and foremost.
Yeah. And in order to save a game, when you've got a Games for Windows Live game, you have to be logged into an account. Which, you know, isn't like an astonishingly, unprecedented difficult thing to do. The problem is that sometimes Games for Windows Live refuses to connect. And that wouldn't be a huge issue if they would tell people and make it easy to create an offline account, which you can totally do if you know where to look for it. And they just make it so damn hard.
But then also, then you would have to, you need to copy stuff from, like,
right.
It's just
if you were playing an online account and then you want to switch to playing an offline account, you have to go into the directories and move your save games from one folder to another. How stupid is that? It just boggles my mind that system has been around for so long and it's still so broken.
Kill it with fire.
Yeah, actually, within the source code of PCGamer.com, we've hidden the precise coordinates for the Games for Windows HQ, and if you want to nuke that from orbit. It's in there. So PCGamer.com. Check it out.
That was a long way to go.
One thing that they also announced recently about Fallout New Vegas that kind of, I don't know, weirds me out because I'm not a big fan, is like there's like 6 or 7 different pre-order bonuses that you can only get if you pre-order through, GameStop or Walmart and I don't know. That's kind of sad for me because I love experiencing everything, especially in those sort of Bethesda games where it's all about the massive experience. And it looked like there was even like, it wasn't just armor. There was like some missions and stuff in there. So
yeah,
I don't know.
I mean, it's becoming more and more common for that to happen.
I guess you can call them omissions.
That was good.
Did you see what I did there?
That's good.
Yeah, I really hope everyone kind of follows BioWare's lead on this where they ended up offering all of the pre-order kind of bonuses like that through their web program. Like if you played their game, a browser-based game, it'd unlock all the Dragon Age pre-order content. So though you don't get it right away, it still does unlock all that content to everybody.
Eventually.
Which,
to me, I no problem with that. No problem at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually a really cool way of doing it because you get the... You appease the retailers by saying you've got this exclusive thing for a period of time, and then everybody gets it, and everybody wins in the end, really.
Also where everybody wins is www.pcgamer.com.
and just to wrap up our discussion about that topic, right now on Steam there is a sale for 50% off Fallout 3 Game of the Year Edition. So it's $25, which is, I guess a quarter of the cost of the original cost of the game and the original cost of all 5 pieces of DLC that you get with that. So if you haven't gotten that game, that's a great price. It's a good time now. And also they've got Oblivion Game of the Year Edition with like a bunch of DLC in there included for $8.50. So that's 1,000 hours of Robert's life right there for $8.50. Does that make you feel cheap, Robert?
Not at all. That time is well spent. I don't even remember what the dorms were like thanks to Oblivion. So it's fantastic.
But it's like it's this big chunk of your life is now being sold for $8.50. That's all you're worth.
No. That
you can buy 1,000 hours of Robert's life for $8.50.
Yeah, if we pool together like all the money we have in our wallets right now, we might be able to purchase all of his life so far.
His complete life, the complete Robert.
Yeah, yeah. Right up until that climactic heart attack.
Yeah.
Right
and,
up. yeah.
And that'd be far less than you could buy Josh's organs for.
It's true.
Oh yeah, we still haven't fulfilled those orders. Shoot.
Yeah, they're really backlogging, aren't they?
So we got a couple more quick things to cover before we get to the interview, which is Dungeon Siege 3 has been officially announced. which I guess that's a tie-in to Fallout New Vegas, and it is also being developed by Obsidian, which was a surprise. I don't think anybody saw that one coming. Dungeon Siege is a franchise created by Gas Powered Games, which is Chris Taylor's company, up in Seattle, the Seattle area, and I guess when they were working with Square on Supreme Commander 2, they must have sold off the rights to that franchise to Square, because Square is now publishing the game and Obsidian is developing. Although Chris Taylor is involved, he is co-producing. So that's you know, a little interesting, and who knows exactly how much involvement he'll have. I'm actually meeting with him right before my appointment to see Dungeon Siege 3 at E3 next week, so I can ask him then. But who knows what exactly his involvement will be in the game. But it is kind of nice to have that, you know, kind of that connection and have him consulting on it at least.
Yeah, that's reassuring.
Did any of you guys actually play Dungeon Siege?
Yeah, I love
it. Yeah, I played at a LAN party once, the whole thing.
Yeah.
It was pretty good.
Yeah, basically I house sat with some of my friends in high school, and so we just played like the entire game in one weekend.
Nice.
Yeah. We ghosted our way through practically the last third of the game. Because if you die, you can turn into a ghost and you still traverse the level.
Yeah, I haven't played Dungeon Siege 2, and I only played a little bit of Dungeon Siege 1, but I hear that it kind of plays itself to a certain extent.
Yeah, you got a little.
It's really not difficult at all.
Right. Yeah, but it puts on a good show, though, right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's fun, and it's really fun if you play with a friend, even if it's just one, because you're having the experiences going together. Because I mean, you're not really strategizing; you're just running forward, blowing stuff up, and getting excited about putting on a new sword or something.
So it was kind of funny for me to hear this announcement, because I was down at Obsidian's office for New Vegas a while ago, and they were you know, saying, okay, and over here is where we're working on Alpha Protocol, and over here is where we're working on New Vegas, and over there is our unannounced thing. And it's just kind of neat to have a face put on that. But yeah, it explains why, you know, I was talking to Fergus Urquhart, who's the head of Obsidian, and he was talking about how he had been talking to Chris Taylor recently while I was down there. I'm like, oh, now it makes sense why he was talking to Chris. Anyway, so, and the final bit of news is, right now, Team Fortress 2 is available on Mac. So, Evan, I believe you have something to say.
Noob.
Release the hounds.
Get them, boys.
Seriously, I will personally award something, anything. You can find me on Steam with evidence that you've damaged.
Put bounties on their heads.
Exactly. If you can present evidence on YouTube or a screenshot that you've injured a Mac gamer, either his ego or his virtual avatar.
Collect their white single button mice as trophies, yes, and bring them to us.
Oh, it reminds me of there's this scenes in Resident Evil 5 and Mass Effect 2 when you see the body stacks going up to the ceiling, just arms, heads, fingers.
Destroy them all. There's actually Valve, of course, in its continual updates we mentioned earlier. If you go on over to teamfortress.com, there's a funny little comic about the update where some of the characters basically walk into a Mac store and are presented with new weapons.
There aren't any new weapons being added to the game, though, right?
No, not at this point. Engineer update's probably going to come, I would estimate, 2 weeks after E3, around like June 25th or 26th.
Is there an exact time on June 25th or 26th you want to call out? Say 3:23 p.m.?
No. Oh, actually, let's see. I'd probably say it'll be July the 1st, actually, because they always do updates on Thursdays, like, hey, today's Thursday, they're updating.
What time, Evan? What time?
5:30.
All right. You're here to hear first.
Pacific.
If it's wrong, Evan is forever banned from anything.
No.
He can never play Team Fortress 2 again if that's wrong.
Ow.
I heard that. Yep.
We need him on our team. Can't ban him.
Damn it, he might go over. He might play a Mac if that. All right.
Oh, yeah.
So, yesterday, Telltale Games, best known for the revivals of Sam & Max and Monkey Island adventure games, announced a deal with Universal Studios to create adventure games based on Jurassic Park and Back to the Future. We're here with Dave Grossman, creative director for Telltale Games. Dave, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So the burning question, will there be hoverboards?
Will there be hoverboards? Well, I don't know. Our engineering staff is hard at work making some hoverboards for us to try out, just so we can decide if we want to put them in the game, and it depends on where their efforts go.
So they're making physical hoverboards for you to try out, right?
Yeah. Okay. What I will say is the game will not be about racing around on hoverboards. We tend to focus a little bit more on kind of story and characters over here.
All right. And the even burninger question, will there be dinosaurs on hoverboards?
Dinosaurs on hoverboards. Either really big hoverboards or really small dinosaurs. I think, back to Jurassic Park would actually be a kind of a cool license, but there might be, you know, some tonal problems and some arguments between the two. So I think for now, we'll probably try and keep them separate.
But prime for a crossover.
Yeah.
So there hasn't been a Back to the Future movie in 20 years, and the last Jurassic Park movie came out in 2001. And, you know, I'm kind of seeing a pattern with, you know, with picking up Sam and Max and Monkey Island, both kind of long dormant franchises. What is it about those types of franchises that attracts Telltale?
Well, they're the fact that they still have enthusiasm behind them after all these years says to me that they're pretty strong licenses. They really like Back to the Future is not just sort of a time travel story. It's all about, it's very personal story about Marty and his life and Doc and his life and how they affect themselves, I guess, throughout time. And you know, we've got a lot of fans around the studio, so there's just sort of internal excitement about them.
A lot of children of the 70s and 80s in there, huh?
Yeah, and some of the 90s too. So these young whippersnapper kids coming in, but it's retro for them, so it's all good.
So how did this deal come to be? Did Telltale approach Universal with an idea for a great Jurassic Park and or Back to the Future game, or was it the other way around?
That's a good question. I don't actually know the answer to that.
Well, this is Joel Dreskin. I'm here with Dave, and to my knowledge, we have ongoing conversations with all kinds of people, including Universal, and various and sundry ideas have been kicked around with these kind of bubbling to the top with lots of interesting ideas. You know, as Bill Kispert, the head of Universal's licensing group, was saying, you know, they're interested in doing different things with the property than just kind of shooting dinosaurs, you know, in the case of Jurassic Park, and they like what Telltale's done with cinematic adventures and felt like that could be a really interesting direction to go. So, you know, kind of short version is, you know, we talk to people like Universal a lot and these kind of bubble to the top. I don't know, you know, with these particular ones, if the conversation originated on our side or their side, but, it's definitely a mutual interest in doing interesting things.
It gets a little murky sometimes. Like we do pitch a lot of stuff internally, and I'd be surprised if nobody mentioned Back to the Future, like the first week the company was in existence. Back then it was probably a little bit too big for us. I doubt we could have gotten our phone calls returned. But it's, you know, it's the kind of thing that will just sort of percolate around and come back to the surface every once in a while. And we'll go, hey, you know, it really would be cool to do a Back to the Future game. And Jurassic Park for us is really, it's kind of more about, stretching our reach out into an area where we can do a story that's more serious and tap into some different kind of emotions and you know, just different kind of player experience. We're going to explore some new gameplay with that one and develop tension and drama, which is something we feel excited about doing and have felt for some time. So it's good to kind of get out of the just sort of the region of comedy that we normally are in.
So you're tired of comedy?
No, I will never get tired of comedy, but I don't want to just do comedy.
So what was it about these franchises that you guys felt lends themselves well to an episodic adventure? And Back to the Future seems like a perfect candidate because they can, you know, go anywhere, anytime, and have, you know, zany antics. But Jurassic Park seems a little bit more action-oriented and a little bit less open for, you know, storytelling wherever you want to go.
Well, I suppose you could put it that way. I expect the reaction really to Telltale is doing a Back to the Future game to be sort of, well, of course they're doing a Back to the Future game. You know, we're surprised they didn't do it, you know, years ago. And Jurassic Park may seem like a little stranger to people, but actually I think it's quite well suited to the kind of storytelling that we do because it's it's built on having all these kind of tense cliffhanger moments that that happen, and I can think of many points during the movie when I would say, "Ooh, that's the spot, that's the end of the episode right there." People are hanging on the edge of their seats, they've got questions in their heads, and we're gonna resolve them next month. You know, now discuss the story for the next 4 weeks until the next episode comes out.
And with the characters in these games, for Back to the Future, you can't have Back to the Future without Marty McFly and Doc Brown. But with Jurassic Park, you've got a larger cast of characters. The movies cycle people out. I guess Jeff Goldblum is in most of them.
I don't think anybody is in all three of the movies. Sometimes the appearances of the characters are kind of peripheral, which I sort of wonder, why bother? But there are, the dinosaurs are always in it, for one thing. And there are kind of, common themes that run through the whole thing that I think are actually kind of more important to Jurassic Park than the individual characters are, if that makes sense. Sort of all about, life finds a way. You find that in all of them.
Hey, Dan, can I ask a question?
Sure, why not?
This is Ryan McCaffrey just completely showing up uninvited from the official Xbox Magazine podcast. We were just talking about this on our show too, guys. Dave, I'm curious, how are you guys going to handle Jurassic Park stylistically? Because you guys, pretty much all of your games are sort of very, very cartoonish and sort of lighter style, whereas Jurassic Park is sort of a darker, grittier, more realistic thing. I mean, I don't expect to see Max looking dinosaurs running around.
No, it's not going to be a cartoon. And it's, to be fair, we actually do have one series that we do that doesn't look like that, which is the CSI series. But really, with each new series that we do, we take a step back and approach the art fresh. So while there is some kind of stylistic consistency between the series that we have done, you'll notice that Wallace and Gromit, for example, doesn't really look anything like Monkey Island, because we stepped back and said, okay, well, we need to do the clay and we need to make it look like stop motion. And so we did some technical things with the renderer and we stopped down the frame rate and stuff like that. And currently doing some similar kind of work with Jurassic Park, just to make it look good and make it look right and appropriate to the license.
And what about voice actors? Do you have plans to get some recognizable voice talent involved? I don't think Christopher Lloyd is doing a lot with his time these days.
That's all totally TBD.
Yeah, we literally finalized this deal within recent weeks.
Yeah.
So yesterday's announcement was very much about announcing the partnership and diving into the production of the projects, and there's kind of a lot that is coming together right now. So we'll definitely have more announcements as they come to light.
I suppose TBA is the proper.
Yes.
Would you like to have?
Sure. I'll take anybody, who is going to give me just kind of more hook into the license and what it's about. And I think those guys, they understand their characters, so I'd love to have them.
Tom Wilson's just doing stand-up comedy these days. I'm sure he would be up for reprising his Biff role.
Right on.
He's out there. He's doing some funny musical comedy stuff.
So, Dave, as a creative director, which one excites you more, Jurassic Park or Back to the Future? I know they're both your children at this point, but you've got to have a deeper connection to one or the other.
They're more like my grandchildren, I think, than my actual children. I don't know. I love all my children equally. I'm attached to both of them in different ways. I think Back to the Future is kind of classic, really funny, really clever kind of thing. But I'm really excited about what we're going to do with Jurassic Park, because it just feels like, we're taking a little bit bigger step away from ourselves with that one, and that's going
to
be cool.
So you're looking forward, like you said earlier, to the opportunity to do something other than comedy?
Exactly, yeah. New gameplay intended to generate different kinds of emotions in the viewer. It's definitely, we don't want to just make an adventure game out of Jurassic Park. That just wouldn't be quite the right approach.
So you are planning to adapt the gameplay a little bit more to the setting than the typical point and click or drag and click as the you are planning to adapt the gameplay a little bit more to fit the Jurassic Park and Back to the Future setting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just a bit of a thrill ride with this one.
And you guys feel up to the technical challenge there?
Yeah, actually, yeah. I'm not worried about the tech guys at all. They're good.
Yeah, I mean, you're currently working on Sam & Max, Back to the Future, Jurassic Park, your new original project, Puzzle Agent, and probably a few more we haven't heard about yet. How many games can one small independent studio make at one time?
We'll let you know when we figure out what the maximum is. A lot, apparently.
and maybe not so small as some might think. We've been growing quite a lot over the years, and we have grand ambitions.
How many people do you have up there now? You're in San Rafael, California.
Yeah, you know, last I heard was somewhere around 80.
Yep.
That's a decent size for any studio.
Hey guys, what do you think of the Sega CD sort of adventure-y Jurassic Park game? Has that entered into the research process at all in setting up this project?
We're mostly focusing on the films and where those go. You know, the Sega CD thing is, I'm sure, fine, but not the kind of approach that we would take.
Back to the Future and Jurassic Park were just announced this week, but they're both scheduled to come out this winter, and that's a pretty ambitious development schedule, which I guess you guys are kind of used to with your episodic delivery. But are you just running around, you know, quoting Jeff Goldblum going, must go faster?
Well, yeah, we have a big picture of him up on the wall with a recording that says must go faster. That's just to motivate the people who work here. You know, I will say, obviously, we didn't just start on those things today. We've been doing some of the preliminary work up front, but yeah, we certainly do work pretty quickly from kind of soup to nuts. And I mean, that's just what we do. We're comfortable with it.
For a little bit of background on your personal insight into these movies, what are some of your favorite moments from either film?
From either film. Well, I love the part where Marty steps out of the DeLorean and the Tyrannosaurus comes tromping up and starts chasing him down the road, and then they skid out into the giant load of dung that whacks the Tyrannosaurus in the head and knocks him out. That's my favorite.
Okay. And do you have one for...
I may be getting a little confused here. I'm sorry. I do have to think about several licenses at once. It sometimes gets to me.
But do you have anything for Back to the Future?
That wasn't from Back to the Future? Wow, that whole movie is just so chock full of little things to notice. I think that's my favorite thing about it. Like, the first time that I've seen it a number of times, by the way, that I noticed that when he comes back to 1985 again, that the name of the mall has changed from the Twin Pines Mall to the Lone Pine Mall.
Oh yeah, I just saw something about that recently. I never noticed that one either until just recently.
But you are not as observant as me. After observation or something.
Yeah. So let's give a little shout out to your upcoming project, the Puzzle Agent. Can you tell us a little bit about that one?
Woohoo! Puzzle Agent. How's that for a shout out? Yeah, that's another kind of a departure from our usual line of business, I guess. It's sort of, you know, non Monkey Islandish. We've been developing in partnership with a guy named Graham Annable, who is actually our former creative director, and who is a brilliant cartoonist in his own right. And he's done a lot of comic books, and also he has a series of videos on his website, which he sort of lumps together under the brand name Grickle. It's cute, but kind of creepy and dark at the same time. And what we wanted to do was to kind of take that and make a what's essentially like a puzzle game, an abstract puzzle game, but with a story wrapped around it. And then you know, it's kind of simple play, aimed at PC and iPad, and you get in, you experience Graham's weird sense of humor and his peculiar art style, you experience an interesting story, and you get to solve some puzzles along the way.
All right, so when is that expected to be available?
That's supposed to be shipping this month, I believe.
And speaking of things coming soon, you've got the next episode of Sam & Max, They Stole Max's Brain.
They Stole Max's Brain. Yes.
Yes, and we can we can break a piece of information right here in this very show.
Oh yeah.
In mere moments from now, we're just going to confirm for everyone that episode 3 is coming out June 22nd.
Oh.
And that is PC, Mac, PlayStation 3 in North America, and then it's coming out for European PlayStation the day after because they publish on Wednesdays. Yeah. So yes, just a hot breaking news right here on the podcast.
And I will say that the first 10 minutes of this episode are one of my favorite moments from the whole season.
I look forward to that, because the first 10 minutes of the first one was pretty hilarious, too.
That was also pretty exciting, yes.
All right, gentlemen, well, thank you very much for spending some time with us today.
Hey, Dan, there is one other thing.
Oh, yeah?
Hey, Dave, can you talk real quick about getting back in the same room with Tim Schafer and Ron Gilbert to record the developer commentary for the Secret of Monkey Island Special Edition 2? Was it just like being back? Did you just hop in a time machine? Speaking of DeLoreans, how was that? We talked to LucasArts on our show, and I guess you guys just did it in one long afternoon session.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to get the three of us in a room together is the thing, and it's like it wasn't exactly time machine-y because I do see those guys separately on occasion. Ron comes over and plays poker every now and then, so it's not like we totally haven't seen each other. But I'm pretty sure the three of us haven't been in a room together for probably at least 10 years. So that was a pretty cool thing to do, and they did it around the game developers conference, because all of us were kind of, centrally located, and they just sent a car and grabbed us all and took us over there for a couple of hours. It was really fun to do, actually, and despite the fact that those guys' memories are both shot, and they have no idea what they're talking about.
They remember who you were?
They did remember who I was. We disagreed about something that a story about which piece of animation was the one that triggered a particular conversation that resulted in the inclusion of Maniac Mansion inside of Day of the Tentacle.
Well, we're all looking forward to the release of Monkey Island 2.
It's going
to
be pretty fun, I think.
I've actually never played that one, but my wife has, and she is really eager to play through it with me.
It's Dan. It's possibly the single greatest adventure game of them all.
I know, and that's why I'm looking forward to it.
And it now has a built-in hint system, so if you're the kind of person who has trouble getting through these kinds of tricky things, there's help for you.
Good, because I'm pretty dumb.
Yeah.
All right, guys, thanks a lot for spending some time with us today. We'll be keeping an eye on Telltale.
All right, thanks for having us.
Gamer Podcast. This is Will from South Dakota, home of Mount Rushmore and porn. Question on Steam. Porn? I just recently upgraded my XP machine to a Windows 7 machine, and I attempted to back up all my game saves, but when I reinstalled Steam and reinstalled the backup copies that I did, my game saves weren't there. I still have the old hard drive that has all my game saves. My one that I'm really concerned about is my Torchlight. I've got like 11 hours into that game, and I really don't want to lose all that. It's kind of special to me, Anyway, if you could give me any assistance on what I can do to get that information back, I'd greatly appreciate it. Thanks.
I looked into this quick. Granted, I didn't reinstall an OS or anything, but I took my save file. It's in a folder, and Torchlight, like quite a few games these days, puts it in My Documents and creates a folder called like Games.
Which I wish more games would do. If they just go into My Documents and put it in Games, that would be handy. Although, specifically Torchlight, I'm surprised he's having this problem, because Torchlight now uses Steam Cloud to to sync your save games. So like if you're playing in two different spots, you can download your latest save game onto your second computer.
So here's one thing. I'm not sure if you've tried to run Torchlight again, but go ahead and try to run it and launch it and see if it doesn't actually take your save games out of the cloud, down from the cloud.
It would depend on when he last played it.
Yeah.
It could
give
be.
Give it a shot.
Yeah, because that was updated. That was added in an update.
Yeah. The second thing you could do is obviously mount your, plug in your hard drive, mount it as a, hopefully you have a hard drive dock. That's really cool to have. Otherwise, just install it back into your PC as an additional drive. And then you can search through the folders there manually. Look for, My Documents, Torchlight, Games.
Or Games, Torchlight, yeah.
Yeah. Finally, it's possible that, Dan, that you had tweeted about application game.
Game Save Manager.
Yes, I wonder if that will even search the additional drive.
It may. I haven't tried it on external drives, but yeah, that's a good question.
But even if it doesn't, you want to install this for Win 7 for when you upgrade to Win Vista Fantastic in 2015, because it tracks all your saved games and backs them up for you, right?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I don't know how I got by without this thing for so long, but I lost a lot of saved games. That is actually how I've gotten by. But anytime I'm gonna reinstall my machine or reformat my machine now, I'm gonna run this program first, Game Save Manager, and you know, save all my backups there.
It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's astonishing that nobody did this years and years ago, or that it's not built into the OS.
I wanted to clarify that South Dakota is in fact the land of Mount Rushmore and corn, not porn.
Yeah, that the land of porn is California. We don't know that.
South Dakota. Oh, so he really didn't say porn?
No, he said corn. I'm fairly certain. I lived in South Dakota for 21 years. I mean, I saw a lot of corn.
And a lot of porn.
All right. Okay. Well,
it can be both, Eric.
It could be both. Yeah. There you go.
That'd be a great license plate frame. Home of corn and porn.
Yeah. And Eric has starred in a fair amount of porn, right? No.
Well, yeah, but it hasn't left South Dakota, so we shouldn't talk about that.
Yeah, because there's no internet there.
Next question. Oh my God.
Hey, Brett from Massachusetts. Just wondering about voice control in games. I discovered Windows 7's integrated voice control about a week ago, and it's awesome. You should all try it. But do you ever see it getting big in games? Like PC games specifically? I know that EndWar tried to do this with RTSs a while ago, but I have not actually played that. I know Dan did, but I don't know how well they pulled it off. But it doesn't seem like it pulled it off too well, from what I'm able to gather. But what are the possibilities of voice control, like giving your commands to your squad in Arma 2 of AI, or other simulation e games, or just shooters in general? I mean, that would be pretty awesome. I'd love to see something like that, but there's no talk of it. Like, there's all this talk of going 3D and going motion control and all those kinds of features. But voice control has kind of fallen by the wayside when I think there's so much possibility there. So really, do you guys see it happening? Thanks for taking my question. Keep up the good work. Bye.
Gimme. I want this one. Gimme.
Go for it.
Can I have it?
Only if you say the magic word first.
PCGamer.com. So, I think voice control is a fantastic idea. I would personally love it. I am the worst weapon switcher in the whole world. And I just terrible at it. If I could just yell shotgun, or actually more realistically, if I could scream shotgun when I needed it, you know, that would be fantastic. Cause I just have a hard time with, you know, hitting the numbers, accurately and the scroll wheel. But here's why I think it hasn't happened and it might not happen. I know some games tried, but I can't think of them right off the top of my head. It's actually an interesting story to look into about who did it in the past and who may do it in the future. So, hey, stay tuned. But the problem is that it's not an easy technology, obviously. It's taken a long time to implement. And if you do implement it, it's expensive. It's difficult.
Expensive in terms of money or in terms of?
Expensive in terms of, you know, money to develop the software and to integrate it into your game. And, you know, it's time consuming. And the problem is, if it doesn't work 100% perfectly, all it's going to do is piss people off. And that all that time you spent trying to add something really cool will turn into a net negative, you know, because people go, you know, I said shotgun and it gave me the, you know, pistol. So I think that's why people are maybe kind of afraid of it. Because again, if it, just like voice recognition software, it's amazing how that technology works. And yet none of us use it. And we're writers. None of us use it because 97%, 98% accurate voice, transcription is unacceptable. Because then you end up having to read carefully everything all over again and correcting it, and you end up spending more time than you would have if you just typed it yourself.
Got it. Have you tried Google Voices transcriptions?
Yeah.
They're hilariously bad.
I know. I'm amazed that they work as well as they do over crappy phone connections. And yet at the same time, I realize, yeah, it's not useful.
So that's why I think, that's what I think is happening, is people realize if you can't hit 100%, and that's almost impossible, especially when, you know, you're like, if you're like me, I'm, my mouth's full, I'm got popcorn or sandwiches in my mouth, I'm like, where's the shotgun? You know? And if you can't get 100%, you risk putting in a feature that just ends up turning people off.
And, you know, I'll say a few other things about EndWar. You know, I kind of liked it. Just the game was kind of slow paced enough for it to work. Voice control is slower, especially in a strategy game, than clicking where you want something to go. You had to say like, squad alpha, go to point delta, you know?
Oh, and, right.
Yeah. And it's like, I could have done that in like a tenth of the time just with the map.
That's true. Right.
So, but the game was paced to allow for that. Which made it kind of neat. Squad alpha, go to guy. You know, it just made you frustrated, and it made you sound crazy to anyone in your house. which is kind of another issue with it, because it does make you sound really weird. So I mean, like it was driving my wife nuts, when I was playing that game. But, you know,
yeah, the only thing I can kind of see it catching on is like an option. Like, where you can control everything with the mouse, but if you spontaneously want to give an audio or a verbal command as well, then it will take that instead. I can't picture, like, a game like End of War where we're just sitting there repeating it over and over. I mean, who wants to play that for more than an hour? I mean, your throat is just going to get tired.
Yeah. And you know, there are tons of games. I mean, like Star Trek Online, for example, I would love to be able to say, you know, fire phasers and have them fire phasers. But, you know, and I actually did like get that working with like a third party program. I forget what it was called, but with Star Trek Bridge Commander way back in the day. But I looked like a total nerd. Like everybody in my house and in college was mocking me for, you know, giving commands to my helmsman.
Did you like sit back in your chair like you were sitting in the command center, just kind of leaning and thinking and pointing as you said like order phasers to fire?
I did, and like in that particular game, like the voice recognition software I was using was terrible, so I had to repeat stuff a lot. But when it worked brilliantly, because that game was really set up to, you know, kind of make you feel like you're giving orders to your crew. So like you would say helm, you know, attack pattern delta, and it would do it. Although in my case, I think I had to give it like, I would have to say like 1, 4, you know, because it was like mapped to key commands for some things. But I could say like helm and it would go to helm. That was kind of cool. But, yeah. And when it works, it makes it in the right context, it's great. But yeah, it's a ways off. And I think, you know, the reason motion detection is taking off is just because they can do that accurately now.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Although I would actually like to fire, with voice control. Blam, 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 blam.
It would be great. Awesome. It'd be great if it would recognize when you're swearing and like penalize you for that somehow.
Totally.
Like if you you know, shout a string of obscenities at a game and it just keeps hurting you.
It's funny actually that you say that, because there is, I'm using the word game loosely, but there's a product out there called Wild Divine. And it's a biofeedback machine that you put on you put the mechanism on three fingers, and it's sort of like the mind control things. It measures, you know, the skin galvanization, you know, the electrical charge in your skin, as well as your pulse. And it teaches you how to control those things by giving you feedback on the screen. So it shows you a pile of rocks and you have to stack them, and you can only stack them by like reducing the electrical charge in your skin. Or lowering your pulse rate.
And hey,
learn how to do that.
Can I just say that Wild Divine sounds like a North Dakota porn star name?
It does. And it's a very kind of new agey type thing, you know? But it's pretty cool. I mean, you learn to control your heart rate and all that. And yeah, how about that? PCGamer.com.
Anyway, let's move on to playlists and wrap this sucker up. Logan, what have you been playing?
I've been alternating between Split Second and Blur, and doing not too well at either one of them. But they're
both. Which do you like better?
I'm kind of leaning toward Blur, but I actually play Split. I mean, I'm leaning towards Split Second, but I'm I tend to play Blur more just because I think the controls are a little better. I think I will probably end up going back to Split Second some more. I just think it's more intense.
I played some at a event before it came out, and it was a pretty fun game. I mean, I don't play a lot of racers, but you know, it's not very demanding, and it's pretty to look at. And lots of things explode. I guess in our review, Andy Mahood had some bugginess issues with it, where it would end a race like a couple of seconds after it began, and so he like won a race with like a 3 second time on it. And like he said, he had problems sometimes where we had the opposite problem where a 2-lap race would turn into an infinite lap race. So he had to actually quit out of it. But
I'm also, I had to. I couldn't, you know, I have this thing about horror and especially survival horror. So I just had to dabble in Alan Wake for a bit to see what was going on over there. And I'm, man, talk about blowing it. It's just like that. It's so. You see how great it was supposed to look. And I think at the time that the Xbox 360 came out, it had amazing anti-aliasing capabilities, but it just can't keep up. And now it just looks like, you know, it just kind of ruins it, you know, what should look like a very inky and dark and terrifying sort of forest scene just looks like jaggies everywhere. And, you know, it's still, it's interesting. I'm not having a bad time.
How is the game?
It's, again, I'm not having a bad time. I love the structure of it, you know. I just find the visual quality to be pretty, it falls well below what I expected. So hopefully someday, you know, we'll get to see it at 1920 by 1200 or, with anti-aliasing at 4X, maybe not.
Yeah, it's been another Team Fortress 2 filled week. We've had some ridiculously terrific games on our servers. I mean, our servers usually, and of course, when the website launches tomorrow, we're going to have a nice representation of all of our servers that you can jump to, the IPs and descriptions there. So look forward to that on PCGamer.com. But, our TF2 server has like, always been a nice balance of, you know, feeling competitive and having a great bunch of regulars that show up every night, but it's casual in the same way. Like, we'll turn on all talk sometimes. We'll make fun of each other. We'll play some fun maps. But just lately, some of our great regulars, Havoc and Z, Delusions of Grandeur, who else am I forgetting about? Lupus, those guys have just been, we've been having some ridiculously tense matches together. And I've been playing heavy kind of for the first time. I've only had about 3 or 4 hours in the class. It's my least played class up until now. And just breaking all kinds of kill records I have in that game and mowing people down. It's a fun walkable turret to play as.
And Josh, I know you've been playing a lot of League of Legends.
That is pretty much all I've been playing, actually. I'm feeling kind of a repeat. Like, around like October, November last year, I kind of stopped playing WoW because I was just playing League of Legends all the time. And that's pretty much this week again. I've been playing tons of Shaco, which is like the Demon Jester. He's got a sweet Mad Hatter. I've got a 3-to-1 kill to death ratio right now. So I'm feeling pretty good about that. We've been doing, last night we did a Steam group game. So I just made an event impromptu with our new combined Steam group. We got like 15 people in within a few minutes. We did a sweet 5v5. So we got both teams on Skype calls. It was really, really fun. The thing I love about the game is, like Demigod, is there's plenty of time to just kind of talk and have fun and kind of talk about things. But then it's like interspersed with those very sporadic, hectic moments where everyone gets serious and just focuses. All right, this is what we need to do. This is how we need to win. And then you can go back to just kind of talking in between.
Smack talk.
Exactly. Well, yeah, well, you're talking with only people on your team, so you don't smack talk too bad. in theory. But yeah, I'm really loving it. League of Legends community is just so friendly and so good. It's such a nice change of pace. From the other Dota clones. So yeah, other than that, I've been playing a little bit of the South Africa soccer game, getting ready for the World Cup this weekend.
But did we suddenly slip into the PC Gamer UK podcast? Is that
world what? What do you drink out of it?
Well, Gary wasn't here, so I'm just kind of filling in for him.
What do you drink out of it? That's amazing. Yeah,
I have to say, speaking of drinking out of, the
skulls of my enemies.
The Murloc Beerstein just got released today. So they have all the World of Warcraft ones. Now we have a Murloc one called with 3 exclamation points.
Nice.
Another snan chapter in WoW's merchandising.
Hey, yes. Josh, quick question.
Yeah.
For stuff like the Cup of the Murgle and all that, what kind of website would you go to get news like that? You know, from like on a continuing basis, like not waiting for a podcast.
Well, you know, I might say PCGamer.com.
And Eric, how about you?
Like Josh, I've been kind of dragged out of WoW and into League of Legends. Been playing with him and my brother. We had a sweet Steam event last night. Josh's team kicked my team's butt halfway to South Dakota. it was not a good game for us, but we had fun nonetheless.
It was pretty even. It wasn't too lopsided though. It was back and forth for a while.
Yeah, yeah. And I have done something painfully addictive. Harold. I am playing Frontierville, Zynga's new Facebook game.
Hey, can you cut his mic, Andy?
Yeah, that's the one that I blocked right away. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so now I'm taking care of a frontier. I'll stop talking now.
And Robert, how about you?
I played a little League of Legends with Josh and Eric, and that was pretty fun. I definitely need some more practice in that. I played a melee DPS, and I think I just need to find the right character for me. So next time I jump in, I'm going to jump in this weekend and try out a caster, see how I do with that. Other than that, I've been playing Alien Breed Impact for review. It's interesting. I definitely suggest you play the demo or read the review in an upcoming issue of the magazine. Because the demo is very good. And beyond that, I definitely think you should probably wait to see what we have to say about it.
What kind of game is it?
It's a basically top-down shooter. It's in the vein of, you know, the action shooters from the arcades back in the day, like not so much Contra, but more like, I don't know if any of you ever played Mercs or Commando, kind of like that. You know, you're getting flamethrowers and missile launchers, and you're basically just rolling through hallways, gunning down hordes of aliens, basically. And it's got some Dead Space vibes. It's, you know, you're on a ship and you're killing aliens, and that's about all there is to the game. And it's fun. It's definitely fun, but it's pretty average, I guess, is to put it nicely. So,
and Andy, how about you? Have you been playing anything?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess the most relevant thing I've been playing is Alpha Protocol.
How are you liking Alpha Protocol?
At first, it threw me off because it seemed like a blast from the past. It felt like I was playing Deus Ex almost at the beginning, like during the tutorial level.
That sounds like a good blast.
Well, in the way that, in the sense that the controls felt like I was playing Deus Ex, you know what I mean? Like, okay. It wasn't quite responding to my inputs like as much as I wanted it to, and like the cover system and stuff was a little bit rigid. Trying to throw these grenades at these guards like during this training thing, and it just didn't feel like a modern game, I guess you could say. But now I'm going through the levels. The first few missions are pretty tightly designed, but they're a little thin on content, if you know what I mean. So I don't know. We'll see if it opens up and I can start. They sort of tease you in the beginning with a really interesting prospect of like psychologically like profiling people and then doing conversations with them with that in mind in order to like, you know, manipulate them with
the dossiers.
Exactly, like the tones that you take, like your voice, or excuse me, like your, you know, your dialogue options have more of a tone than a good or bad, you know, and you sort of use those, it sounds like, to manipulate people. And so I'm excited to like get into that deeply. I'm hoping that it pans out to something a little bit more fleshed out. So
what skills are you specializing in? And I'm just curious.
I'm actually even though I had read that it doesn't really matter if you go stealth or not, I'm kind of going stealth, and I'm kind of learning that it doesn't matter, but it's still fun to try.
When I was playing it, I went like, you can carry like 2 submachine guns.
Yeah.
And if you upgrade them, they get incredibly overpowered, like game breaking. So I'm interested in how the stealth works, but it sounds like not that well.
Well, it works, but you eventually can just kill anything anyway. Like, you don't have to be stealth. So I don't know if I'm just sort of going through the motions for no reason.
And on my end, I've been playing a little bit of Star Trek Online just to see what's changed. For the most part, it's like very similar. It took me a long time to notice any real differences because I started from a fresh character. But once I got up to like the almost lieutenant commander area, then I'm starting to notice some real difficulties, because I've got the difficulty slider, all the way up to elite. So the battles are a little bit more challenging, and the death penalty that's there, actually, it makes me want to stay alive. Who knew? You know, I don't just throw myself needlessly to my death anymore, knowing that I'm going to respawn without any penalty. So it makes it a little bit more interesting. The other thing that I really like that they changed is they made it so you can auto fire your weapons, so you're not constantly pushing the freaking fire button over and over again.
Bang, 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 bang.
It's more of a pew, 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 pew. And, you know, in the context of, you know, commanding a starship, it makes more sense to just say, fire at will and go to town. It's still a little bit monotonous after a while. I probably won't stick with it much longer, but it's been interesting to see what they change. And also, the reason that I'm going to see Civilization V at E3 is I've been playing some of Sid Meier's Civilization IV Colonization. But long story short, I was up until like 3 a.m. for a few nights playing that game, just trying to tweak the everything exactly right to get my colonies producing large amounts of cigars and all kinds of crazy stuff. And it's a complex game that gets simpler as you go on, which is kind of an inverted kind of thing for a Sid Meier game, but you know, it's maddeningly addictive in a lot of ways. So anyway, that'll about do it for us. We think we've put on a hell of a show for you guys this week. Please check out PCGamer.com, and we will see all of you from E3 next week. What episode number is this, Andy?
I don't know. I don't want to go to the site because it's flagged as an attack.
Don't, you know what? Don't be a pussy.
226. 226.
All right. That's a good place to cut into the interview segment, don't you think, Andy?
PCGamer.com.
Andy would agree. Well, PCGamer.com agrees too.